Hi everybody, welcome to Season 3, Episode 19 of the Hard Truth Inside the Football Industry podcast with me, Philip Heidson, and Darragh McAnthony, chairman and co-owner of Peterborough United. And Darragh, we didn't have games this weekend.
No, really frustrating, wasn't it? It was like penis envy, you know, watching the FA Cup, you know? It was like very irritating, you know? Like, you love the FA Cup, you know, and not to be involved. And, you know, shout out obviously to Wrexham, to Stevenage, good old Stevie boy working his magic. You know, some great results for the lower league teams. It's that romance, you know, that you know, growing up watching the cup. So, yeah, I was gutted there was no games. I went down to the training ground on Saturday mornings. We had a great house game, you know what I mean, the training ground. And then tomorrow we've got an under 21 game, but it's a strong 21 side. The manager's playing, so I'm actually going down to watch that. And then I'm off scouting a game in the evening. So I'm looking for that. You know, it's really funny because the owner of the club I'm going to scout, that usually you put in for tickets for me and Baz or whatever, and we've never had it back before. We get like a message back going, the owner of our club wants to know why your chairman's coming. It was kind of like, to watch a game, you know, just getting football, you know, like, that's it. You know, there's no ulterior motive. But if I'm not allowed to come, just say so, you know. It's like funny, you know, just curiosity, I guess. So it'll be a long day tomorrow, and really, really looking forward to it, to be fair.
So I do want to just jump in and say, you know, we got some noise in the background and we kind of spent the last couple of minutes trying to fix it. And I think we know what it is.
There's a wanker with a leaf blower outside. And I just like, he's been going on all fucking morning driving mad. So he's like, shut the fuck up over there. So apologies for the lack of professional sound, or the sound isn't perfect for guys. If there is a buzzing in the background, it's not my vibrator. It's actually the fucking leaf blower across the road.
Next time we're going to get you to book the BBC studio. So you don't get this on the 72 podcast, do you?
No, never. Cup, obviously I'm off to a game after our 21s game tomorrow. Yeah, went down to obviously our place on Saturday. So yeah, it's been a busy weekend, busy few days coming up. The Cup, obviously the romance of the FA Cup is alive. I watched Liverpool play against Wolves' second string side. That wasn't very good. We got very lucky to get a draw. They scored a legitimate winner that was disallowed because they didn't have a camera angle for the VAR. I haven't got a game until this time next week, Port Vale on Monday. So again, scouting on Tuesday, going to scout on Saturday, going to get out to games.
We'll have to come back to the cup in a minute, but is it good not to have a game with all the change with Darren coming in, or do you actually just want to get out there and play some football?
No, I'm not going to lie. A part of that was played in when I let the staff go, that just left the club, that we had a good 10, 11 days, almost a chance to, okay, get in, you know, a new manager, you know, get your identity across, you know, how you want the players to play, look at the whole squad, who's staying, who's going, you know, that kind of thing. So I think it's worked well, but you always want to play games, don't you? You know, we didn't have a lot of games Christmas. We had a game postponed, and you know, I want to see games while I'm here. So I'm not going to get to see a home game before I go, because obviously I'm flying back to the States. So it'll be Port Vale next week. So yeah, got it, but that's football.
So I think one of the first orders of the day for Darren, now this may have been in the works beforehand, I don't know, was signing Will Norris, a experienced keeper, to come in.
Yeah, so that had been floated around, obviously, for a while. You know, we were unlucky. The Hull boy's never been fit since we've had him. So he's potentially going to go back. Otherwise, he won't play for us, and that's not good for his development now he's fit. So our own youngster, Will's, come in and got a clean sheet, done really well. Still did well in the Wickham loss, but potentially he needs to go out and get a batch of games. We really feel confident in his future at the club. And the gaffer said to us, we went down on, was it Saturday? But before that, we'd spoken on the phone. I said, look, we have this possibility. We know his agent really well, Danny. And there was a deal to be done. He's 29. He's a good-sized goalie. He's got a bit of experience. You know, penalty extraordinaire saver, if that ever comes in handy, should we hit the playoffs or anything. And he will be excellent for Lucas. Lucas is away on international duty, so he hasn't really spent any time with a manager. Lucas has been brilliant at the start of the season. He's had a rocky month. For young goalies, it's quite normal. And also the team hasn't played well. So, you know, you can blame goalies and whatever else, but really it's a team thing. So we feel good about him and Lucas competing for the rest of the season, yeah.
You mentioned about the Hull keeper going back. He hasn't really played much. You know, when you bring in young players on loan, do you feel a responsibility to their development too? And it's not, well, they're not ours, so they're not going to play. So it doesn't really matter if they're not going to play.
No, we you know, our goalie coach, Mark Todd, is a pro. He works with the goalie coach at Hull. It's Barry Richardson, who we used to have. You keep in touch. You tell him about the session. Same with the Chelsea goalie coach. You have to. This is what happens when you have other people's assets and young goalies. But unfortunately, he's constantly had an injury issue that's reoccurred a few times. He just hasn't been lucky. And we just feel now at this stage in the season with 22 games to go, is he going to come in and get in the team or if he gets injured again? And it was just felt, look, let's try and work with Hull to get him back there. Those talks are ongoing, but it's best if he goes back and they can get him out on loan and he will go to a team that can play every week. Otherwise, it's a young, talented player that's not even going to be on the bench. So that's not going to work. So that's what you do, and that's where we are. So, yeah, it's a situation.
Any movements in the near term in the transfer window expected?
Yeah, so we obviously had a really good meeting on Saturday and spoke about the squad. You know, originally players like Nathan Thompson were looking to leave, you know, under the previous regime. Talks are ongoing about Nathan staying. The manager likes him, wants, you know, that leadership around the dressing room and the training ground. And I spoke to the player with a few other players that there were offers in for. But nobody's leaving until we've got through the training a few days the manager wanted and also the game tomorrow. After that, then we'll assess it. One player that we, you know, that we had in the building, has had a, you wouldn't believe the look. I go down to the training ground on a Saturday. I meet with the manager. We go to the training ground. They're about to have this 11v11, and they're doing warm-ups, and two of the players go down with hamstring injuries. And one of them looks like, if the scan doesn't go well, they could be out for the season. And that's somebody that, I don't want to say who it is, but again, it's a in a defensive position that we were, you know, happy about, and they could be done for the season. So, pending the results of the scan. So that's really frustrating. So right now, yes, the manager wants one specific player, well, specific position in. A player we'd actually chased before, but went to a different club. And we're talking to them. But again, the player, you know, it comes down to, does the player want to come? Do they not want to come? January is never ideal. I've always said this. I think January is a horrible time to recruit players. And it's not a good time to recruit managers either. It's one of the things I spoke about when I brought Fergie back. But if we can do a couple of things and they make us stronger, we'll do them. If they're not going to make us stronger, we won't do them. Regardless of what people want to say about, oh, you need this, you need that. They have to make us better. There are bids in. We've had multiple bids for Jack Marriott. We've held off on them until the manager tells us what he wants to do. So, you know, not bad for a club, supposedly, you know, needs to sell players or do whatever. We've had multiple bids for Jack Taylor. But again, like miles off. Every player is evaluation at our club. And we were honest with the player, the club, the agent. That's been going on for like 2.5 weeks. And again, like, they know who we are, you know, what we are as a club and whatever, and we don't give our players away. You know, that boy costs us now. We've nearly paid £1 million for him. We bought him out of non-league. So, you know, that's what we are as a club. We love him. We feel he's one of the best central midfielders in League One. But again, like everything, it is. Everyone has a valuation. That's just the way it goes. People always say, oh, you sell your players, and oh, is there someone for sale? But I promise you, every club in League One, most of the Championship, if they get the right offer for a player, they will sell them. Doesn't matter who they are, they will sell them. If Burnley are top of the Championship, somebody offered £25 million for one of their players, they're probably going to sell them.
You know, so it's reinvested, and that's the model.
That's it, you know. So the game was good on Saturday. It was good for the manager to see. There were things you're watching and what he's saying to the players. It's frustrating. You look at the stats for League One. You look at the overall things. You look at the things we are, you know. We're top five for, you know, shots. We're top five for, like, goals scored. But you look at us and watch us playing, you wouldn't think that. You know, we don't score a lot of late goals. The average, I said it last week, but I went through the stats today. The average goal scored in the last 15 minutes in League One is 24% of goals. 24% club average in the final 15 minutes. Ours is 1.7%. We don't score late goals. So there are lots of fundamental things that are wrong, but they're not massive things that can't be fixed. And I think the players with a purpose and identity, a bit of cohesion, I think us defending better in the second half of the year, because that's obviously, like, you know, a massive problem for us in the first half of the season. Defensively, it's not been great. And that's really surprising when you look at the experienced players defensively we have, you know, Kent, Knight, Thompson, you know, Butler, players that, and you're not blaming any of those players. We just, as a unit, as a team, haven't probably defended as well as we can. Maybe that's to do with maybe we don't have the ball enough. Maybe we don't keep possession enough. Maybe we're under too much pressure. So we have to, there's lots of things we have to try and flip. We have 22 games to do it. You give everyone the best chance possible. It's a clean slate. There were no nervous people when the manager came back. you know, I think there were a lot of happy people. But now they have to go out and do the business on the pitch. You know, starting away at Port Vale, and it's a rest in the away form, you know, being good at home, trying to score goals, lots of goals, because that's what we're all about. And yeah, so you know, looking forward to it. Yeah.
The scoring late in games, is that tactics or is that general ebbs and flows of a game?
I think it's mindset. I think it's mindset. I think it's identity. I think it's substitutions. I think it's everything. I think there's been times this season we've been 2 or 3 nil up, and that's been before the hour mark. And Peterborough of old would win that game 5 or 6-1 or 6-2. They would go on and like break your spirit. You know what I mean? And it hasn't been there. And I don't even want to say it's a fitness issue, because I think we're a very fit group. The previous manager, I'm going to give him and his team that, but we're a fit group. There's a lot of running going on. Do you know what I mean? But I just think the last 15 minutes, you go back to promotions 2 years ago, the late goals we scored in games, you know, particularly away from home, and you know, some of the results we got were based on running over teams late on. So I'm hoping there's a bit of that. We've got some very good players who are quick, and you're hoping now as tired legs kick in, you know, a lot of those things happen. So look, it's like everything else. You know, you look at things and you go, wow, how's that even possible? Like 1.7%. Like that's impossible. Like that's never been like that. But that is a problem. That is a problem, because you marry that up with the amount of goals we conceded late, because we haven't scored in that period. We've probably lost 20 points in those 15 minutes of games.
Yeah, I'm sure you concede a goal and then all of a sudden the heads drop because you haven't been scoring late on and you think there's no way back.
Right. And they're all the things you go back to. So it's mindset. Everyone has a clean slate. Go out and do what we want to do and go out and try and dominate games and try and score goals. You know, that's our identity as a club. So we have 22 games to do it. You know, we have to go and give it our best shot. And who knows where that takes us.
Now, there was one other transfer out that happened a couple of weeks ago. We just didn't talk about it last week for obvious reasons with everything else we talked about. But that was David Ajiboye going back to Sutton.
Yes.
He went back on loan, I think.
Yeah, so it didn't work for David. When I say it didn't work, you know, a very talented player. You've seen enough of him. Should have been a home run success. For whatever reason, he didn't take his opportunities, whether that be in the EFL Cup or the League Cup or coming off the bench, maybe didn't settle. He didn't want to go anywhere else. We had 5 clubs who wanted him. You know, one of the AFC Wimbledon wanted him. And my preference would have been for him to go to a team competing for promotion. If Bradford had come on, I'd have been all over that and said, look, great move for him, you know, because he's a very accomplished player at League Two level. But I think after the bad few months he had, when I say bad, he just didn't settle. It didn't work for him. It was a big move. And I think he wanted some home comfort. And he's been at Sutton a long time. So I did what was right for the player. Usually you would say, no, I want him to go to a promotion team.
Yeah, maximize my potential future value.
We had a club come in at the last minute and actually offer us all our money back. Mm-hmm. You know, we were spending money in League Two. And again, David made it clear there was only one place he wanted to go. So sometimes you have to do right by the player. And hopefully he can settle, do really well. And then he can have an open mind in the summer to other opportunities. If it doesn't work at our place, there's a player in there. I know everyone wants to throw in your face, you know, wow, I mean, Levi was back out with his usual. I told you this signing wasn't going to work, which is fair enough. He's entitled to his opinion. It should have worked. He should have been tailor-made for us. You know, you saw enough of him. He's a very, very good attacking
player. Yeah, he did well last year. Certainly against us, he did well last year.
He did well the last 2 years when you analyse, and he should have been able to step up with a plum. But really, sometimes, you know, he played less than 3 games for us. I think he started league games. You know, at the end of the day, it just doesn't work. So that's the way it goes.
And you kind of compare that with Poku, where he had a good year, but then he actually fell off the boil a little bit. But you stepped up, you took him, and actually he took the opportunity and look at what he's doing for you. And I guess you never can quite legislate for which way that's...
The only thing I'd say there, and this is no disrespect to David, the technical ability between Kwame and David is, as you'll see, as careers go, you know, the Sky did a big thing on the best young English talent outside the Premier League yesterday. And Ronnie and Kwame were in that. You know, surprised, you know, we didn't have another one in there as well. But, you know, they were both in there because Kwame is just, yeah, he could be anything he wants to be. And we all know about Ronnie. So, but you're absolutely correct. You know, Kwame came to us so cheaply because he had that down year at 19, which I was delighted about. But I can show you people in the England team who at 18, 19 had a year, 2 years down year. So this happens with young players. And that's sometimes when you say to your fan base, you know, don't get frustrated with young players because they have dips. You know, Lucas the goalie, classic example, absolutely outstanding for 3 months. And he's had a rocky month. He's a young player. He's had a dip, but he's about to make his debut for his national team. That's off the back of playing with us so many games. So an outstanding talent, but you always know a young player will have a dip. You know what I mean? And we have a few of them in our team, young players. But like I said to you before, our problem this season hasn't been our young players. Our problem this season has been the experienced players haven't stepped up. The experience, and this, again, I don't want headlines, me having a dig and creating mayhem for the manager. I've said this before. Our experienced players, for whatever reason, have had a hangover from the championship. The good news is it's not too late because they're terrific players and they can snap out of the hangover and get sober and go again. You know, and there's been probably 5-6 of them who are playing at 60% of their talent. If they go up to 80%, watch us go. So now the key is how do you get them up to that level? Because marry that up with the young players who've kept us kind of alive and in it, you know, and in touching distance to the playoffs, you know what I mean? It would have been a disaster. So now you want it to come together. The freedom of the young players, the intensity, the experienced players, you know, if that works together really well, we could do really well. We could go on a run, a serious run. So who knows? Let's see.
Well, one last thing, which is actually a good segue on experienced players. So Craig McHale-Smith, formerly retired this week. I wonder if you could share some memories of his time at the Posh.
My first memory of Craig was doing a double deal for him and a centre-back, Shane Blackett, at Dagenham. And it was in the old days where you did a loan-to-buy automatic deal. You could do that. We bought him in the November. And he was joining in the January. And you couldn't get out of those deals. And my first memory was Barry ringing me and telling me he'd been tapped up by other clubs and he didn't want to come. And we just hired Darren. And Darren was like, met him and said, waste of time. And I rang Barry one day because I so badly wanted this player because of everything he did pressing-wise, the ability. And I knew, you know, with McLean, they'd be statistically an unbelievable pair. And I rang Barry and said, I don't care. You get his parents and him around your house in Bedford and tell them I will sue the arse off them and him, Craig in particular, if he doesn't follow through in the deal that we signed with Dagenham. So he's coming. And everyone's like, do you want an unhappy player? I was like, I don't care. He was badly advised by agents at the time. Now, from that day when he joined us onwards, I couldn't say one bad word about him because he was a model professional, an absolute thoroughbred, an absolute warrior, an absolute gentleman. And just somebody that, you know, he's in there in the top 5-6 players to play under my ownership and a proper legend for the club. And I've got to know him, and obviously because he's married Barry's daughter, and, you know, off the pitch, they've got children, lovely people, have their own businesses, their own careers. Craig bore a very bad injury, an Achilles tear, whatever it was at Brighton, stopped him from doing even better. And he could have had a career at the top. But he got every ounce out of his ability and he made it happen. And he was just a tremendous player. Great role model for young players to look up to, you know, because Craig would miss 6-7 one-on-ones in a game. Back in the days, we were creating 20 of them in a game. And I'd be just fucking going apeshit. Barry would be like, I don't fucking care. He keeps getting there. That's all that matters. It'll come. And again, never let his head drop. Craig could miss 3 one-on-ones, wouldn't let his head drop, and he'd create or score a goal the last minute to win you a game because that's who he was. And that's the mental fragility of younger players nowadays where they miss those chances, their heads go. I see it in some of our young players. They miss a chance. I saw it in a training game on Saturday. Miss chance and the head goes. And they're gone for 20 minutes. And it's like, no, you're going to get another chance. You got to keep going. You got to keep believing. And you see it in the World Cup even. You know, players missing chances. It's like, no, you keep getting in there. And if you keep getting in there, a great example would be Darwin Núñez at Liverpool, who's getting absolutely battered. I don't know why. Because he's an unbelievable talent. He's missing loads of chances. Don't matter. He's getting there. He's getting in there for those chances, his movements, his ability to be there at the right spot. The chances will come, or the goals will come. And once they come, they usually come in clutters. And that's what happened with Craig. And that's why he was a beloved part of the Holy Trinity, you know, which will be forever in Posh folklore, you know. And yeah, so really, really wish him well, you know. Nothing but an absolute true gent and a pro.
Well, let's... move on to some other topics. There's a bunch of stuff that's happened since we last really recorded because we didn't record over Christmas that we just thought we'd catch up on. I do want to do a quick catch up on my Bradford. We signed Matt Derbyshire, which was, I wasn't really sure where that was coming from at the time. 36-year-old on an 18-month deal, who's a striker, who's, you know, did well for Blackburn, but been around.
Has he been signed for the dressing room?
Yes. So he's been Mark Hughes' once more leaders in the dressing room. So he's certainly been signed with that. They believe he's really, really fit, for his age, and that he can still do a job. And he's not coming for the money. So it seems like it's character, a little bit of something different that we don't have. If it doesn't work on the field, then, not too much lost. And they still think he'll bring some, a lot on off the field.
Yeah, no, fair enough. Well, if it's low risk financially, then and he brings a massive difference to the dressing room, you got to do what you got to do. You're right there where you want to be for 2023. So if he's part of that magic ingredient to get you and propel you up, what a move.
Yep. And we just unfortunately lost Tyreek Wright today, who was on loan from Villa.
Where was he playing for you in your team?
He was left wing, and then we've been playing two up front the last few games, so he was playing as a second striker.
Well, that's unfortunate. So what are you going to do to replace him?
Yeah, I'm not sure. There's talk of somebody coming in from West Ham today, who I can't for the life of me remember his name because I just saw it about 10 minutes ago. I think he was on loan at Newport, and he's been recalled from Newport. I think that Derbyshire is a... Because they were thinking about Wright maybe playing in that formation as kind of off the shoulder if we needed that. So that's the role that Derbyshire would play if he plays.
What else do you need?
What do we need? I still think we need something in central midfield. Okay. I think that you've been playing a diamond the last couple of games, which has actually seemed to be more effective in having Smallwood at the base of a diamond rather than in the center two, and him just kind of sweeping up and kind of directing play from there. And that's worked the last few games.
That suits him and his age. That's what we did with Grant McCann when he came back when he was like 30 or 31. Mm-hmm. Darren switched him to the bottom of a diamond, and he was unbelievable for 2 years in there. Just tick, 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 tick.
Yeah, because I think it's not worked as... It's not like he's been poor, but the midfield has been has not been as strong as the rest of the team when he's been playing two, in the middle. But it seems to have freed him up a little bit to go into that base of that diamond. So if we continue with that, then maybe we don't need somebody there. I think that we feel like we're in a pretty good spot. We're, fifth on the table. It's really interesting. There's like one or two points between fifth and I think 15th or something crazy. But we do have two in hand.
Salford looked very strong. I watched them. And, Elliot Watt, after his year off with you, where he was kind of, not what I'm saying.
Probably hankering for a deal or something. Having a contract on his mind.
His numbers, his data, watching him play for Salford, he's like a different player now. So very frustrating.
Yeah, he played because we beat Salford on New Year's Day. And he wasn't, we kind of negated him, which was good because, he is a really good player on his day. But so it's interesting to hear that he did really well when you saw him.
Saw him, the data. I mean, he's like, top three central midfielder in League Two from all the data this season. And I watched the game and I thought he's done very, very well. I always said to you 2 years ago, I thought he was a good young player. But, and I thought it was a weird move to Salford at the time. But then again, that's reflective of the year he had. So, before, but... Yeah, it frustrates you sometimes when you have players and they go on and do better when they leave you, doesn't it? It's like, what the fuck?
He's a better than League Two player, but like you say, he's down year, then he probably felt he was better than League Two, had a down year, took him a while to realize that the offers weren't going to come from League One.
Maybe that's it. Maybe he's had that kind of come to Jesus moment where it's like, okay, I'm not quite a Premier League kid anymore. And I've got to look at my career here and really start putting it in at this level because he's far too good for that level on his day. You know what I mean? So fair play, interesting.
So we briefly touched on the cup, but I do want to shout out for Steve Evans again. His
Stevie boy,
he's flying in League Two. I think I saw that he got a contract extension in the week, and I haven't seen the goals, but I saw it was like two late goals against Villa.
What did I say to Bradford and Bradford fans? What did I say? What did I say? Hire Steve Evans and you'll be in the championship in 3 years. Mm-hmm. And obviously a lot of them are, I'm not having a... Blah, 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 blah. And what's he doing with Steve? Where is he with Stevenage at the moment? If you want to get out of that league, sometimes you have to pay the price. And he's just... Stevie is Stevie. He is what he is. And he and Reigns, just to get every ounce out of what they have in front of them, you know. And he's got a band of players there that on paper you'd probably say, well, you know, they shouldn't be doing what they're doing. But that shows good management. So he's getting more out of the players than you'd expect. Whereas maybe you'd say, club like mine winning 11, losing 11, we're not getting as much out of the players as we should have.
So what's the secret then? Is it the recruitment of players who adapt to that challenge?
Yeah, it's making sure the players he has can deal with him, can deal with Reigns, can deal with the way they play, deal with the way they are, deal with the theatrics, deal with whatever else. You know, people go on about the style. You look at most League Two games, it's the same style up and down, you know, like with all due respect, you know, same in League One. You know, it's not like Barcelona and Brighton and, you know, technical football and, you know what I mean, that kind of thing. You know, it is what it is. It's direct. You know, I've just seen us lose a few games to direct teams, you know. So, you know, him and Reigns will get them all up. He's got some experienced leaders in there, warriors. He's getting the best out of them. He's sprinkled a little bit of magic dust in there. He motivates. He'll be busy this month, knowing Steve. He'll sign four or five players. You know what he's like. Because I said to you, every 6 months he needs to do that, refreshing. They've just beaten Villa in the Cup. They've got that going for them. So that's now that wonderful word, momentum. So watch out League Two. I'd be absolutely stunned if he didn't win promotion from that league again. And again, I've always said it, he is a serial promotion winner. You know, and I messaged him last night, you know, and just said, look, you know, bravo, brilliant. You know what I mean? Like Stevie doing Stevie things. So I'm happy for him and his family, you know, because he gets so much slating sometimes. And it's not deserved because, you know, he's manager of the year in League Two. Would you disagree?
Yeah, and I think that, you know, it's all part of the persona. You know, I think that's one of the things that I learned is there's a persona of Steve and then there's a Steve underneath it.
You spend 10 minutes with Steve, you'd like him, Phil. You would. You'd like him. He was at one of our Under 21 games a couple of weeks ago having a cup of tea with me in the boardroom, you know what I mean? You'd like Steve.
Well, we did the pod with him last year.
Yeah, and you liked him. You were surprised by him, you know? So that's what he is. That's who he is. And he can't change that this late in life now. You know, at the end of the day. But results speak for themselves. And, you know, I am not. Do I look stunned? Not at all. And by the way, they fucking beat us twice this season. So I was sick of the sight of them. So fucking, you know, another incentive for us to get promoted so I don't have to play his team again.
Yeah, well, I remember him saying, like, you know, at the end of the day, I'll do whatever I need to do to win.
Oh, 100%. That's who he is. Do you know what I mean? It's like, he is, yeah. Look, fair play to him. Happy for Phil, who owns Stevenage. Because they're good people behind the scenes. You know, I know a lot of them, and always great to see them do well.
All right, let's see what else we got going on.
Who won the World Cup, by the way? Was that one of my tips? Did I tip them to win the World Cup?
I'll tell you what, that tip wasn't looking too good after that first game against Saudi Arabia, was it?
Hey, never in doubt. Great World Cup, really enjoyed it. I know everyone's favorite thing is to talk politics and talk all the stuff off the pitch, but, you know, we're a football podcast, so let's stick to the football. Really enjoyed it. Thought it looked great. Gutted I didn't get to go there myself. You know, it was a work stuff and whatever. But yeah, in the end, it was a dream end for Messi. You know, everything he needed to complete the whole thing. And yeah, and obviously made Ronaldo look like a fucking baby. So yeah, I guess the GOAT debate is thinner and thinner now.
I think so. Although, I mean, you're a Ronaldo fan, right?
I was until I saw his behaviour the last few months, the Piers Morgan interview, the way he's acted. The way he's acted at United, even acted in this World Cup when he was dropped and his girlfriend and the stuff and social media. He's taken 200 million to go to Saudi, you know, where I think he could still play in any other league in the world. So, yeah, I'm kind of like, yeah, you know, but I've always said a part of the debate with Messi was I'd like to see Messi have done it in England. I'd like to have seen him do it, you know, in he's been to France, the biggest club in France that win the league, like hands down. And he's been at the best club in Spain for years. So I would have liked to have seen him come to England and do it in England.
It was, I think the whole world, except for maybe the Brazilians and the French, were cheering on Messi at the end there. And,
yeah, you know,
I think we wanted him to end his story in that way, or that, you know, he could always look back and have that.
Yeah, I'm a Mbappe fan. I love him. Obviously, the Argentina keeper, he's like the king of shithousery, you know what I mean? Like the stuff he did. It was a great match. Even my kids watched it. It was very enjoyable. It was a great World Cup final. So it ended well and fair play. Look, France, I mean, by the way, France, what a talented squad they have when you look through all the players missing. I mean, and then I was looking the other day, but Deschamps obviously signed an extension. I forgot they got to the Euro final in 2018. You know, they won the World... No, 2016, they got to the Euro final. They then won the World Cup, obviously, in 2018. Obviously, didn't do great at the Euros last year. And then, obviously, got to the final. What a record he's had.
Yeah. What can Mbappe achieve?
Anything he wants, but he needs to get out of Paris. Anything he wants, he needs to get out of Paris. He needs to go to, forget about Man City. He needs to go to Real or Barcelona. He needs to go to, Liverpool or Man United. He needs, the sky's the limit, but he's 24 now. And playing in the French League is a waste of his talent. And I don't think he's going to win Ballon d'Or or whatever they're called while he's in Paris. And he needs to get out of there. Like, he took the money and signed that extension. He needs to move to other clubs.
When it seemed like Real was the place that even he wanted to go to until he got, basically the freedom of the country waved in front of him.
He's got more money than he ever spent. So what he now needs to do, if he's chasing Ronaldo and Messi, he needs trophies, he needs goals. And he needs to do that for some of the biggest clubs in the world. And with all due respect to PSG, I don't think, bar their money, they're one of the biggest clubs in the world.
Now, how about a Messi versus Maradona debate?
Messi. Consistency. Messi. Maradona was, mercurial talent. Unbelievable. But he had that off-field side to him. Party, enjoy himself, all the things that got him in trouble. He didn't have the dedication Messi and Ronaldo have had to the craft. And I think to be considered a GOAT, and you can put Pelé in that bracket, to be a GOAT, you have to be a professional, a consummate professional as regards to you play 50 games a year, you're never injured, you don't fail drug tests, you don't create controversy, you're not seen falling out of nightclubs with birds and whatever. You are just a professional. And you play late into your 30s at the highest level. Maradona, in isolation in a 3-4 year period, was untouchable. But did he do it in a 10-year period? So for me, it's Messi, Ronaldo, and Pelé's in that argument. God bless. God rest his soul.
Yeah, and honestly, that's how I feel too. And I felt like it's unpopular opinion because, everyone speaks so highly of Maradona. And of course, like you said, he had that period. But
it's the truth.
Yeah, Messi for me.
Hey, that's fine. And listen, we have to have a quick shout-out, Pelé. We have to have a shout-out for Gianluca Vialli. Two great players in the game. Really sad, Vialli gone way too soon. Pelé, obviously, in his 80s, unbelievable life. Obviously, didn't want him to suffer at the end. But again, as a fan of strikers, nobody. And this is back in the day where it wasn't a Ronaldo type striker or Messi, where you're part of a front three. Pelé played in those Brazilian teams, 58, 62, 66, 70. Yes, they didn't win 66, but three World Cups. He scored 1,000 goals. At a time where racism, would have been terrible to deal with all over the world, that man never stopped smiling, and an exciting player. I mean, yeah, I wish I was around in those days to watch that, the enjoyment of watching players like that. And we never got to see it.
You can only imagine how much he got kicked around as well.
Ah, kicked around, racially abused, all the stuff that goes with it. And to rise above it, to be the man he became, to right down to the end, Pele's Pele. And there aren't, a lot of players. You still got Cristiano Ronaldo, you still got Lionel Messi. It's Pele. And there ain't another Pele. So, for me, my God, the gates of heaven have got some talent up there knocking around. I don't know if Maradona made his way there. I hope he did. But you can imagine the games they're playing up there. To be wow. So yeah, football's lost some great people, which is always sad. Vialli, another one. But your memory would be of him and Mancini last year in the Euros. As part of the team that won. And again, taken way too soon. So it just happens too much.
Yeah, Vialli, my memory. So he was manager of Chelsea in the days when we were in the Premier League. And it was one of our finest hours was beating that Chelsea team. It was all downhill from there. We beat Chelsea. I think it was 2-0 or 2-1 at home. Carboni had just signed and he was, looking magical. And you thought, we've cracked this Premier League. And then we didn't win again for about 4 months.
the high to the low. Yeah, no, unbelievable. But, lovely person that you see all the way that people talk about him. And God bless his family.
How do you react to England's performance in the World Cup?
Poor. 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 How would I react to it? Built to win, to go all the way. And I just thought, did okay. Yeah, scored a lot of goals in the group stages, did what they had to do, got through. And I just thought, France, the France game, watching it back, thinking about it and whatever else. Should have won that game, you know. It was there to be won. France are very good, don't get me wrong, but they're not magnificently good. They weren't like a team that you'd be fearful of. And if you want to win tournaments, you eventually, you have to play those teams. And obviously, both times England have been tested, or three times now, you know, Croatia, Italy in the final of the Euros, France in this World Cup, they failed. So ultimately, whilst they've gone far in tournaments, when you look at it in isolation and start looking at the teams, bar beating Germany in the Euros, yeah, because I don't count Denmark as a big scalp, but bar beating Germany, across those three tournaments, is that the biggest scalp? And that was a Germany team that wasn't the greatest team. So, you know, with the talent they've got and whatever else, I felt Gareth is done very well. I don't think he deserves to lose his job. I think it's fine he stays on. I don't think there's anyone better at the moment. I just think he'll look back with regret and when he's finished and go, we could have won one of those tournaments. Could have been us, you know. So, but look, is what it is. That's just my thought. That's my thought process.
Now, do you see the England team getting stronger from here or weaker from here? Because that was like the, you know, the gold generation was always, well, you know, you peaked and there was nothing really coming behind.
No, stronger. I think they get stronger. I think they've got some good, you know, if they can get over worrying about Trent Alexander defensively, you know, which is always the argument why he doesn't get in teams. You know, if they can start getting those young players in, if they can get Chilwell fit, if they can keep the Chelsea fullbacks fit, I think they've got a magnificent midfield in there. I think the talent up front, the Fodens of the world, you know, they have got, you know, Saka, unbelievable. Someone's going to have to replace Harry Kane. He'll go on for the next 2 years. That's fine. I think they're built to win. I think the talent's just emerging and coming through all the time. And I think if Pep Guardiola managed England, they would have won either the Euros or the World Cup. With the talent he would have at his disposal and the way he plays and controls the game and whatever else, where he's not worried about the things Trent can't do defensively, but what he can do going forward. I just think, yeah, England have got a generation of players that will only get better, and there's more and more of them coming through.
It seems like it was the making of Jude Bellingham, or maybe Jude Bellingham arriving on the... is he already on the scene, but only to those that know, who are students of the game. You know, it's like he came to the masses.
Yeah, look, Bellingham is just an unbelievable, he's a generational talent. To put him in there with Declan Rice, put someone in front of him, you know, whether you're going to drop Foden in there or somebody else. I mean, you know, England are set. You know, they probably need another centre-half to break in. They need full-backs to stay fit. I'd look at the goalkeeping situation. But, I mean, they could go as far as they want. You start looking at the players up the field, the goals they can score. You know, England are a serious threat to anybody. And you know, you think of Harry Kane's penalty miss. You know, I think they beat France if he scores that penalty. So, you know, and again, the defensive frailties come back. The goal, Giroud should never be, it's a Premier League goal. You should never be beating your centre half 6 yards from goal. So again, and funny enough, crossing from out wide, you know, where again, you're told that Alexander-Arnold doesn't defend those things and, you know, but it still ends up going in the box. It still ends up those goals coming from those areas. So yeah, I argue that England have got a lot of talent and I think they could be a real force at the next Euros. You know, outside tip, Southgate needs to get out of his own way. You know, there's too much reliance on the safe, tried and tested players he trusts. You don't want to, like, I love Kyle Walker. I'm not sure in 2 years you want to see him. I'm not sure you want to see Trippier in 2 years. I'm not, you know, there are players in there you look at, you know, the obsession with Mason Mount, you know, all those things. And you got to go, no, that you've got better. You've got better players. You've got players who can win games. You know what I mean? Start playing with an offensive mind on it. And you can go as far as you want.
So let's switch domestically. We've got a couple of things that I want to ask you about, and then we've just got some questions that we can wrap up with.
Sure.
For this week. Now, from a domestic perspective, Matty Etherington and Simon Davis, they went to Crawley. Yes. We talked about them going to Crawley, and I think maybe 31, 32 days before they left Crawley. Obviously a surprise that, you know, a management team doesn't last so long, and it seems like it was their call. Yeah. That perhaps they didn't like what they saw.
It was their call. Yeah, it was. Absolutely.
I just wonder if there's anything you could.
I saw all the tweets and whatever guy that was, you know, calling them out. I thought that was wrong. He was calling out Matthew.
Yeah, Eben. Else. It was Eben and Preston who are the two owners. Or the I guess the head of the consortium that bought them.
I've never been a fan of all that kind of thing where you're voting online for decisions and this, that, whatever. I know people think we have to do different things in football, but I've never been a fan of that. I don't want to call out owners of clubs I don't know because it would be unfair. I've never met them. I'm everyone's favorite punching bag, like recently where my new name is the Pikey. You know, you got middle-aged, older men, you know, who hate me so much. They're calling
it's
me a Pikey.
Agent.
Yeah, to a Pikey. And you got some young fans who put hashtag Pikey on their Pikey out on their Twitter feed. So, you know, God bless these people if they ever walked up to me and said that to me. But you look at it and you actually feel sorry for them when they get to those levels of, you know, I couldn't imagine being past my 50s and sitting there disliking someone so much, you know, with everything else going on in your life, that's your only obsession. So I look at owners and I go, I have to be careful to pick holes at them because it's tough. It's really tough on football clubs. I didn't like the fact that Matthew and Simon only lasted, you know, the 30 odd days they were there. That's football. They have to speak for themselves on that. And good luck to Crawley. You don't want their fans to suffer. So I'm sure you have your own opinion on it.
Yeah. I mean, it just, you know, of course, we're all outsiders. It kind of looks, well, I say it looks, it doesn't look good from the outside looking in, but also what I've learned over the last few years is that not everything is always as it seems on the outside when you have more of an understanding of what's going on the inside. And there are sometimes things that can't be said, as a result of that. So there may be some of that going on there. I think, you know, it's probably tough for any new owner who's coming in without necessarily the background to know what the etiquette is. You know, they sat on the bench, Preston sat on the bench for one of the games, doing so, saying he was there to provide support for the, caretaker that they just appointed after Simon and Matthew left. But you just don't do that in English football, but they probably didn't know that. And, you know, you kind of step into situations like that. So what kind of advice would you give to a new owner who's coming from overseas, who hasn't necessarily been involved in football before, of, you know, how to kind of, get started and make sure you don't put your foot in it?
Same as I've said to before and previously, hire a good director of football, hire good people that have been in football a while, make sure they're not motivated to rinse you and take your knickers down and spank you financially. Mm-hmm. Do your own due diligence, do your own research into the game, speak to as many owners as possible. It's amazing the lack of new people who come in and never reach out to any other owners. You can speak to any owner you want at any time. You get the numbers off the EFL. You know, I'd speak to anyone coming in who would want advice, even people buying a club. They wanted to speak to me. I would have conversations with them, no problem at all. Because I feel 17 years doing the job, you could tell them a lot. Whether they listen is up to them. So I'm always astonished at that. I would say to people, it's unforgiving, it's tough. But if you get the right people around you, usually it works well. If you have a plan, be transparent with the plan. Don't lose your shit after a month with the plan. Don't fall out after, stick to the plan, but explain to people the process behind the plan and how it's meant to work. So again, unforgiving, tough spot. Feel for the Crawley fans and for the staff at Crawley, because I like a lot of the people there.
We've talked before around the EFL giving the National League an extra promotion spot, and it seems like that might be getting closer to the EFL actually agreeing to do so.
Good.
Are you surprised that the EFL would vote for that?
Not at all. No, I we've got some good people leading the EFL. They're looking at it and going, this is the right thing to do. It's the fifth division. It's a strong division. Mm. I'm surprised we haven't tried to take over the National League and make it. Well,
and I wonder if that's the next step.
You make it League Four, right. What I mean, kind of thing, and do the same thing. You got, was it four up from League Two, and same with League Three. So, you know, there's so many big clubs now in the National League, massive clubs, big budgets, big managers. You know, obviously the Wrexham story dominates everything. You've got your Notts Counties, you've got, your South Ends. You've got Barnet, you've got Chesterfield, Torquay, there's so many clubs down there, So, it's only a matter of time that would maybe strengthen the pyramid. You know, how that works financially, I don't know. But, there's a way for it to be done somehow. Then it only makes sense, right? And it only strengthens our pyramid, which I said on TalkSport today. We have the greatest pyramid in the world. And I've said it for years. If America just got out of their own way and did a pyramid, the MLS would take off. And it's what makes our league the most watched league in the world, is because the pyramid's so brilliant. So, you know, good for them if they're going to do that, and great if that's what happens, and good for the teams in non-league, because, you know, when you see teams getting 100 points and 95 points and not getting promoted, it's heartbreaking, and it's kind of wrong, and it goes against everything in my body when you go, well, that's not fair. You know, and then you got teams who scrape by in League Two with 25 points or 30 points. It's like, no, you know, the teams down there deserve it.
And you see the quality of the National League is at least middle to top half of League Two right now.
Every team that goes in there usually always goes, what, top eight, top 10 in League Two for a season? So, absolutely. I mean, Leighton Orient a couple of years ago were in the National League. Now they're winning your league, but, you know, and they're going to win your league. So again, there you go. You know, you go back to Forest Green. You go back to some of the clubs that were down there.
Tranmere ended up down there and then bounced all the way back up.
Right, and that's what I mean. So you know, that's the strength of the non-league. You know, and it's kind of like in the old days, be like, God, even some of my fans that you're signing a non-league player. No, you're signing players who are very good professionals who are paid just as well as League Two players. So the difference is minimal.
All right, let's talk a couple of questions that we got in. One is from Scott. I'm not sure if Scott is a St. Johnstone fan or picked St. Johnstone out of thin air, but he says, if Darren and Co. bought St. Johnstone or any other SPFL club other than the top two, how could he make them a consistent top six club in Scotland?
Money. Because what you're up against in Scotland is you're up against the, you know, the monopoly, you know, of the top two. Who are just the richest clubs because they have the bigger fan bases and they have the bigger facilities. They've got history on their side, the romanticism, and they can pay the wages. If Aberdeen or Hearts could pay the wages that Celtic and Rangers could, you know, or St. Johnstone or anyone else sitting there, they could potentially compete. But since Alex Ferguson broke the monopoly and did what he did with Aberdeen back in the day and whatever else, it's tougher. So really, money is the only thing. Money and sharing players. If I had a Scottish club there and we had a top 10 championship club, you'd like to think some of the players that share a system of multi-club ownership would benefit. I'm still not sure you'd break the top two monopoly. You know, so but great question.
Would an SPFL team be an attractive investment proposition when you're never going to win and break into the top two?
No, only for talent. Only for talent. There's a lot of talent in Scotland. Only for talent. If you bought a top six club in Scotland, it would be for talent. It would be taking players from there into the English League. And I don't want it to sound mercenary, but that's the reality of what it would be.
All right, a question from Benno, who's an Ipswich fan. He says, I'm interested to know how shirt deals work. Is there an upfront payment from the supplier? How much do the club buy shirts for? Kind of what's the profit? And how are these deals structured?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, are you talking about, not sponsors, we're talking about doing a deal with Nike or Puma.
Yeah, Puma.
Right, so they come in and there's a commitment to, they give you X amount of free kit, could be worth 100 grand. Which you then use for your players, your staff, your whatever else. You then have a deal where you buy shirts for X and then you can price them for Y. You know, margins wise, probably usually 50, 60%, you know, will be your margins. And that's really the shirt deals. And it's really down to the quality, the freedom of how you can design them. Some of the bigger brands don't give you that freedom. They give you a very monotone. That's your three choices.
Yeah, here's your three templates to choose from this year.
Yeah, the ones I think we got Puma at the moment, been very good to deal with, very good to work with, you know, a real good partner. Other shirt brand deals, they'll give you credit of 3 months. So you'll order 200 grand's worth of kit. Instead of having to give them 200 grand, they'll say you've got 90 days to pay it, which allows you on cash flow. Some of the big boys don't allow you to do that. So there's loads of dynamics to it. You've got to get the right one. I've got guys in my club, Alex, who runs a commercial team, always gets the best deal with best shirt manufacturers. So we've always been really happy with that. And our fans are pretty happy with what's come out of that so far with Puma.
Yeah, and the lead times are such where, you know, you have to make a minimum. You have to make a minimum order commitment, which you don't really know how well a shirt's going to sell.
That's the same everywhere.
Yeah, and then you got to figure out, okay, so if it sells really well, then you end up out of stock and you can't get them in for 3 months because of what the lead time looks like.
We had a third kit or a kit that was really popular, and people were saying, "Why don't you order more?" But the minimum order was like 1,000 shirts, and we would have only sold 100 more. It made no financial sense. We would have been left with stock that we'd be giving away. So again, that's sometimes tough, particularly for clubs our size. When you're selling 28, 30,000 shirts like Bradford, I'm sure it's easier. And I would be amazed if you didn't have the best shirt deal in the lower two leagues. And if not, Ryan would need a kick in the ass. Because obviously, you know, with your fan base, you should do.
We got a new deal this year with Macron, which was, you know, it's a good deal for the club. Before we had, so we were Nike and then went to Just Sport, which was like the spin-off of Nike, which was for the small, like more, because with Nike, they again only gave you four or five brand the templates to pick from. So, and all the things that you said about, you know, it being less, more restrictive in terms of what you can do. So we went there. I think it was Avec was their brand that we used for a long time, but it was one of those things that just kept renewing and renewing and renewing. And we hadn't really taken to market.
Well, Ryan's not a mug. I'm sure he got a really good deal with Macron. Do you know what I mean? So I've just invested in a sportswear company actually. So, and we're going after obviously football clubs. Well, the company's been around for a couple of years, but they're growing and growing. So we're going after like schools and colleges and non-league and like Scotland, around the world, you know, and that's a big part. It's a big business with potential.
So we have a question, which was actually a question for me from Tyke2404 on Twitter, who's a Barnsley fan. He says, Phil, this is a question for you. I have a lot of friends who are Bradford fans and have a soft spot for them. That being said, every season I look at their squad and think it's quite poor, considering the size of the club. It always looks like you sign players others don't want. Despite this, my friends always seem to assume that they're going to be in contention every season. When to the outside, it looks quite clear they won't due to recruitment. Do you think Bradford fans have a lack of knowledge or just generally unrealistic expectations? I'm sorry if that sounds patronizing.
That's a brilliant question. Over to you.
So I think it's fair to say, if I go back before this season, so from this season onwards, I would say we've got a good, strong recruiting structure in place. You know, we're doing a lot of good things from a recruiting perspective that perhaps we haven't been doing in the past. In the past, I would say one of the challenges of us being, you know, Bradford fans and being the size of the club is that so many fans believe that because we're the size we are, we deserve to do well every season and be in contention every season. And so that overcompensates for the quality of the squad. We kind of look past the quality of the squad and think, well, we're Bradford, we should be up there. And so there's this expectation that we will be. From a player's perspective, it's really interesting. You know, you sign players and what we found is that it's almost less about the skill and more about pressure. Like, how do you play under the pressure of being in Valley Parade when you've got a lot of people who are really unhappy that we're in League Two? And honestly, I would say 80% of players we've signed the last few years can't handle that. And they crumble.
Great point.
And it almost doesn't matter how good they are from a skill perspective. So I don't think that maybe we go in with unrealistic expectations because we believe we should be higher. And we talk on this pod all the time about the fact that no club deserves to be anywhere except for where they are. So that's, you know, not what I take in, but, you know, the fan base, I think there's a lot of folks who remember that we should be higher and they expect us to win just because we're Bradford and be up there. But recruitment, I'm much happier with this season. You know, like I say, they've got structure in place now, a lot more kind of formal way of doing recruiting. And we seem to be hitting a lot more hits than misses. So let's see how that continues.
Good answer.
Well, it was a funny one, so I thought I had to bring it up. That's about it. So
cool.
Thanks as ever for your time.
And you, my pal, and you.
Anybody who wants to get in touch with questions, you can do so through the website, hardtruthfootball.com. You can do so via Twitter. You can DM us. There's a million ways out there to get in touch. So please don't be shy. We'd rather have questions coming in than just random kind of abusive comments on Twitter, I think, because then I can pose them to you.
Ask what you want. Just leave out the pikey stuff.
And so next time will you have played, I think, depending on when we record.
Yeah, we're playing Monday, yeah. So we'll maybe record afterwards. I don't go home till the Thursday. So yeah, we can maybe do the Tuesday or Wednesday. Oh, you play on the Tuesday, so maybe we do the Wednesday.
Yeah, we'll figure it out. But we may be a day or two late in publishing, but it's because we're going to wait for the posh Port Vale game.
Okay, cool.
All right, thanks everyone.
Thank you all. Bye guys.
Take care.